someone is telling you like how like profound and emotionally moving this piece of media was to them, and you just
sounds like projection, sweetie. You know what we need to do? Forget gatekeeping. What about gaykeeping? You know?
Wait, are we keeping the gays?
We gotta protect the gays. They're too precious.
No, but are we gatekeeping who is gay? Like, you have to be like a certain level of flamboyant or like a certain level of degenerate or something? Like, how does this work exactly? I need a logistic.
I think we should gatekeep it based on who they voted for in the last election. So it's like,
if you voted for Trump, you're really gay.
Of like Joe Biden, like siphoning out the melanin from a black woman who didn't vote for him or something.
So there's that. But then like, if you're a man, would voting for Trump be more gay because you didn't want to vote for a woman?
That's a good question. Have you seen the Baki thing, by the way?
With like Trump in it?
The customary, there's a new president, and they need to like do the thing with Yojiro and Baki. And Elon Musk is there, and Yojiro is like, what the fuck why is there another person here? I'm gonna rape both of you. It's what we call dark woke, okay?
Dark woke.
Dark woke. And this is Darth woke. And guys, guess what? You're listening to the Weeb Crew, the only dark woke anime podcast. I'm your host, Sciotic. And as always, I'm joined by my fellow dark woke dirtbag left co-host, Mumi.
Let the hate flow through you.
Mumi, do you also hate the Democratic Party? Dude, it's so cool to be edgy. Listen, all right. I'm socially progressive, but get this, I'm also not afraid to say the N-word. That's what dark woke is.
Did you get replaced by fucking what's his name?
What is his
God, name? He's irrelevant now. I forgot his name.
What the fuck are you even talking about?
You know, are you talking about?
I think you're talking about Haruhi, right? Everyone's forgotten who Haruhi is now.
Who?
Haruhi was like an anime character from like the 1990s, I think. And like,
the 1980s P. Diddy shit.
It's 80s or 90s. I don't know which. I haven't seen the show, but I've been told it's for pedophiles. I'm not gonna watch it. I'm gonna avoid it. Like the play. I've actually never seen Haruhi.
Wait, have you not really?
Mumi, how should people watch Haruhi? Chronologically or release order?
Chronologically / rebroadcast order, because that is the time they broadcast it in order chronologically.
This is true.
The second time.
Well, wouldn't then the correct viewing order to be like complete broadcast order, where you do the jumbled up version first?
Yeah.
And then you rewatch season one chronologically, and then go into season two.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Watch it chronologically.
No, you
watch season two in with season one.
Oh,
chronologically.
Oh, so you mean you just watch season one chronologically and go into season two?
No. You watch season one up to when season two airs an episode that's supposed to take place before the episode of season one. Because season one, the last episode of season one, which is like, or chronologically, where it's them in the snow.
Yeah.
That takes place right before disappearance. So that's supposed to happen after season two, which season two takes place in the summer.
Uh-huh.
So all the Endless Eight stuff and all that in the movie they're making, all that, you watch that, and then you watch episode zero, which is the film they made at the
okay
festival or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you watch the last episode of season two, and then you watch the rest of season one.
How long would it take me to watch every possible like order of Haruhi? You know, that's like,
I think somebody I think somebody actually did the math on that.
I think Haruhi may be like the only anime to have ever like had like a inadvertent scientific contribution, because it's called like super permutations or something like that.
Yeah, like every permutation is like infinite or something. There's infinite permutations of how you could watch it, or like
it's- no, it is finite, and they were able to establish like either an upper or maybe also or just like a lower bound for like how many permutations of like how many different Haruhi watch orders there are, and like how long it would take to theoretically watch every Haruhi watch order. And has ended up being like an important contribution to mathematics.
Yeah.
So
see, this is why people can't forget about Haruhi.
This is true. Like, I mean, people talk history. About the influence of like Astro Boy and Evangelion. What have they offered to science? I don't fucking think anything, yeah. Actually.
Is there something named after Shinji? No.
No, I can't think of anything. So, like, I think Haruhi, in that sense, is the most important, influential anime of all time.
It's spanned broad past anime and is now into the real world.
Yes,
and science.
Into the realm of mathematics.
People tuning in are going to just be like, what the fuck are these people talking
about? These guys sound like assholes, and they would be correct. what other Twitter drama do we have to discuss, Mumi?
I don't know. Wait, are we discussing Twitter drama? I thought we were going to discuss like actual anime.
We should probably discuss actual anime today, honestly. I'm sick of Twitter drama. It's we've done like what, like two, three, like the past two, three episodes have been about that shit. And I'm like, I don't care.
I don't want Twitter
drama.
We'll
come back
I just
in
want
like 6 months when something interesting has happened again.
I don't want to be horny.
We need like a new season of anime to be controversial or something. Oh, that was one thing. Like people said like Spy Family was like heteronormative or something. So heteronormative, it like hurts. You know what's really heteronormative? I mean, that fucking I Have a Crush at Work. Have you watched the latest episode?
No,
it
I'm
is
like
painful. I hate seeing people happy, honestly.
Say this is what I've been saying for fucking months now.
It's like I'm watching them and they have like such like a happy, healthy, stable relationship, and I'm like, fuck
yeah,
people,
fuck them.
Why the you people don't deserve happiness? Fuck you, die. One of you needs to die. I hate you. I hate you. And it's like we were talking about it, especially after watching like the most recent episode. It may be the most conflict averse anime of all time.
Yeah,
everything ends up working out for them in the best way possible. The professional
lives
are going great.
The most...
Their relationship is going great. Everything is going great for them. They're all happy. It really does feel like it's like setting up like, oh, one of them is just going to get hit by a truck at some point and die.
That probably is the most realistic scenario for like a... Because like...
Oh,
generally,
are you telling me people's
things are
real
just
lives
working
are
out.
Not as dramatic as a fictional story?
Generally not.
Generally not.
Maybe for a short period of time it can
yeah,
be.
Yeah, it can
or
be,
less,
but
like,
it's
you're
not
just
like... I mean, most people's lives are not interesting enough to be turned into an anime. Maybe that's a hot take.
I don't know, like, So there was, like, a year span of my life where, like, I recounted it to somebody at one point in high school, and, like, they cried.
What the fuck do you mean they cried?
Well, they cried. They just were like, oh, my God.
I'm just, you know that scene in Monster where Johan is like on the roof talking to like the alcoholic guy, and the alcoholic guy's like recounting his like his life story, and like it just cuts to Johan crying. That's just what I'm imagining in my head.
That was like, if someone wrote an anime on that,
yeah,
like that period of time, I would shit on that anime for being unrealistic.
Unrealistically, like, yeah. Just,
and I know this because I shit on Nobody's Boy Remy for the same fucking thing where I'm like, okay, you need to call it, cut it, it's getting a little ridiculous, all right?
Ridiculous with the suffering.
A little ridiculous.
I'm just imagining,
the same,
like, what's that, like, you doing the Kotora-san thing in the rain from the first episode? As he screams in the rain, I'm laughing my head off at how ridiculous it is. Fucking Kotaro. If anyone has not seen, go watch the first episode of Kotaro-san if you haven't, by the way. And maybe even, it's an alright show, but man, that first episode is so over the top with that.
I think I did have that moment when I was like around that time period.
Oh no.
I think one day I came home from school, I just sat in my car and it just died.
Oh, so you were like a young adult, like you were able to like drive at that point then.
Yeah, I was
like a teenager.
16?
Okay.
16 or yeah, because I was 16 because I graduated.
See, I was thinking like younger, like between like the ages of like, I don't know, like 10 and like 14.
No, this all happened like the beginning of my junior year, essentially.
Okay.
It was like 6 months.
You're like, everything sucks. It just kept
tumbling down. And it wasn't even shit that like would generally happen directly to me. It was just like shit that was happening around me and just like, I don't know, it just sucked.
Is it one of those things that you look back on and you're like, and are you like, oh, that was actually like fucked? Or do you look back and you go, man, I was fucking overreacting?
Oh no, it was actually fucked.
Oh, okay.
Like, it was like people almost dying.
Oh.
Kind of fucked. I mean, they were all like, it's one of those things where it's like they were all connected,
mm-hmm.
In like a logical way. Yeah. So like, you know, someone would get into a car wreck because they were going to see someone else in a hospital and they were losing sleep and just fell asleep at the wheel, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was like they were connected, but it was just like it kept compounding.
Mm.
And like, I think the breaking point was like the one thing I had going for me at the time that I was like going and doing and like trying to like work toward like end up being taken away from me because like I missed so much school that, and then like I need to make up some work or some shit, and the teacher was like, my science teacher was like upset because like I was supposed to be given X amount of time to do all my work or whatever,
right
and it went over the 6 weeks deadline, so she submitted that I had a failing grade. Because she was like, well, why didn't you do my work? It's like, because yours is like the hardest one of all the stuff I had to do. And I was able to finish everything else in the time it would have taken me just to do yours. So it was like one class. It was like, I should have like more time. She's like, well, I'm submitting a failing grade and I'll change it for you by next year or next 6 weeks or something. But her doing that then failed me where I couldn't do the things I was looking forward to doing.
Yeah. Okay. Like club activities. It was like one of those stuff. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So it was like that being like the thing that like put me over the edge is probably like overreacting in some capacity, but it's like also at the same time, it's like, well, there's a lot of shit going
on.
Yeah,
I mean, if that's like your if that's also like your main like social outlet too, that's like fucked up.
Yeah, it was not a good time.
Yeah. See now I'm thinking back on like my life during that period, and now I'm realizing like, oh yeah, that actually is like horrible. And I just didn't really give a shit at the time because I didn't fucking care about any. I still don't care about anything. I think I might be emotionally stunted.
Oh, I went through that. But that was like a middle school thing. So like I actually had like put in some like effort into like improving on that. And then all that shit hit me after I did all that.
See, for me, it's like, yeah, like I realized, like I look back on certain, like even when I first moved to DC, I think I've now realized that like, while I wasn't cognizant of it at the time, I think I was like really depressed and homesick when I first moved out, because like I would just wake up and get ready for work some mornings, and then like something minor would go wrong. Like I would accidentally like just, I don't know, break like a small thing or something, like something incredibly insignificant would happen, and I would be like almost brought to tears by it. I'm looking back at that now, and I'm like, maybe I was a little emotionally maladapted for like that like first 6 months of being in DC, and I'm only now realizing, be like, maybe I was depressed. Maybe I
they
still
do, I mean, they
am,
do
I
say that people have
realize.
Like a hard time. People have a hard time like adjusting when like they move out on their own specifically.
Yeah,
because
but
like you
like,
don't have people in the house.
it wasn't even like something I was like particularly like, oh wait, like I wasn't, I mean, I was stressed out in terms of like, oh man, there's so much fucking paperwork and all this like logistical. But once I was actually like moved and settled in, I don't know. I didn't really fucking like, to a certain extent, it felt like nothing in my life has ever really changed. Like I look like,
right.
I mean, I know it must have, but at the same time, like I think about myself now and I feel like I still think and look at the world and behave in a similar way to like when I was like 16 years old. Like 10 years ago. And it's like,
Yeah. Well, I think that's just because, like, you're basically who you are at that age.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't feel like I've changed. I mean, I've changed. There's some ways I changed a lot.
Oh, no,
some
ways again, objectively, like, no. I'm able to, like, look at myself and be like, oh, no, I'm absolutely a different person. But at the same time, I don't. And I think maybe it's just, like, gradual change over time. It's not something I'm like, I like am aware of in the moment, but like looking back over like significant time periods, like if I look at like a picture of myself like freshman year of high school, I'm like, I used to be that person. That used to be me. That's not the person I see in the mirror anymore.
Thankfully I don't have that. Like, I can look and see, like, I'm a little bit older looking, but I look like the same person.
Right.
Like, people will see me and be like, oh, it's you. And I might
Well, that's because you also still have the same haircut, whereas I've lost all my hair.
True. I have the same flowing locks I've had for almost 20 years.
What does any of this have to do with anime, by the way?
We can tie it back in. So,
yeah, all right.
Do you think
it.
That you try to find yourself in any capacity? Because I remember... Beatrice talking about this, where she said that she thinks she got really into anime like she did because she tried to find like answers for herself and her identity in anime.
Mm.
Do you find that to be the case for yourself?
Oh God, no. I mean, the reason I feel like my reasoning, my rationale for getting into anime is completely different from so many. Like, I got into it because there were hot girls in it. I can tell you distinctly. All right, I was talking with a friend of mine over Mumble. We played Minecraft together, and he was telling me about like, he watched, was like the guy who like watched anime, and he was telling me about this anime he watched, which was Problem Children Are Coming from Another World, and he posted like the poster or something, and I saw the bunny girl and I was like, damn, she's fine as hell. I'm gonna go watch that show now on like some fucking pirating site. And I for like the first however many anime I watched, I basically just got recommendations from him. That's basically what I was just like, I want to watch anime now. And then I did. And there's no emotional significance to anything. It's just something I kind of decided to do.
So a bit like. When did that change then? Because like I feel like that's not an uncommon reason to get into anime. People will get in for like
when did I really start getting into anime?
Well, I wouldn't say it like that, but like when did you start like really analyzing what you were watching?
Yeah, where, so when,
you're then trying to find answers.
That would have been about 2013, and you know I was basically, you know, I was watching like, you know, just a lot of like ecchi stuff. So other shows would be like Aesthetica of a Rogue Hero, Rosario Vampire, I think probably Elfin Lied maybe around that time, and Brynhildr in the Darkness as well. Just stuff from that era. Maybe like a bit of like Kill la Kill or like Log Horizon. And then I think, you know, when I started getting into seasonal anime, it was basically like 2016, you know, things like specifically ReZero would have been like the main one that I was watching every week, and I was talking about it on the My Anime List forums, and that would have been my main like social interaction when it came to anime at that time, like just talking to people on the My Anime List forum about that stuff. And that probably would not have been until whenever later, I'd say. I distinctly remember when that anime snob made a video making fun of Pseudo Steph's suicide attempt or something like that, and hearing about it, And I think I maybe was already, like, I think I was probably already at least aware of Trixie's content. My first exposure to Trixie's content actually had nothing to do with anime. It had to do, she made a video on why JonTron Season 3 misses the point of YouTube. And I was like, oh, this fucking disheveled psychopath has interesting opinions. I'm going to subscribe. And it was on their After Dark channel. So I wasn't even aware that that was a side channel for them. And they had this like whole like, you know, main channel just focused on anime. And then I think I probably found Snob. Yeah, no, I think I would have found Snob through like her video, probably just like shitting on Snob. I probably actually like refound their channel because they also had a Death Grips video, like on why Death Grips is like the best band of the 2010s or something like that. So from there is when I saw that like Snob had like a Discord server, and I joined that and started interacting with people. So that would be like basically like my second like outlet for like interacting with people and talking about anime and stuff. And from there, the rest is basically history.
Damn, I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's no it's not like I was like finding myself or anything. It's not like this was like something profoundly emotionally like resonant or gosh, what was it? Was it the episode that we had William Chow on that like it ends with like this very like poignant, moving thing, like, you know, him talking about like the good old days and like the store that he had and like, you know, like all the friends from that the time period. And I think stuff, it just ends with me being like, yeah, I started watching anime for the cute girls.
I like the cute girls.
No, it's interesting because like, you know, I guess to tie this back into Twitter drama, like people, you know, it's been and people I'm talking about like, oh, you know, it wasn't always cool to be into anime. People, you know, into anime like were generally like looked down upon and stuff. For like the longest time, it's like only fairly recently that it's become socially acceptable to have seen at least some anime. Like, I think I've talked about like my sister will be on like dating apps and stuff, like, you know, talking to guys, and they'll fucking like just ghost her once she said she hasn't seen any anime. Like, she's like, yeah, I haven't seen any anime, and then she never gets any DMs back from those guys, which is really funny.
It is funny to compare that to like when people are like, oh, someone on Twitter was like, anime would be acceptable when you can put that you like anime on a dating app.
No, you
like,
can.
People don't.
You absolutely can. If anything, it's probably like a bit of a requirement now, if anything. I think Joe is also like, I think when we had Joe on for the first time, he talked about that even. I mean, you've had some interesting experiences talking to people about anime on dating apps.
Somewhat. I don't know if I would say it's interesting, a lot of them, but
just losing your mind being like these fucking casual normies. They haven't seen Nanoha. Goddamn idiot. Get on my level, fucking tourists. So yeah, I think anime nowadays is definitely way, way, way more socially like acceptable, but it's also like,
oh yeah,
it's only really specific kinds of anime. Like, you know, you can't be talking about stuff that scares the hoes, scares the maidens, you know. It's got to be pretty stuff that's available on Netflix generally.
Yeah, at least not at first. Yeah. You can't go to somebody and be like, well, I don't know, I've done that. It doesn't really lead anywhere because it's just like there's a certain point where like you go so far down the iceberg that it's all the same, right? Like,
yeah, oh yeah,
bringing up fucking Techno Lies as someone that's only seen My Hero Academia is the same as bringing up Matarika or some shit, right? Like,
yeah,
they don't, there's like, okay, some fucking,
it's all
general, yeah,
it's
art
all
house
Greek
shit
to them past a certain,
it's
point.
All Greek to me.
It's all what exactly. The kids are now calling Diddy anime.
It's all Diddy.
It's
anime.
All Diddy anime. Like Belladonna of Sadness. I don't know.
That is the thing that people defend now. But I don't know. Like, I think that people get into anime for different reasons. But like,
yeah,
being into anime, like a sustained reason for being into it, I feel like is you can change, right? Like,
yeah.
when we were talking about, like, with William, I don't think the communal aspect was specifically why he got into anime initially.
No, no, but it definitely like became like a major facet after a certain
point. At least like in retrospect, like I don't know if you necessarily even think about it a lot of the time. Like I look back at like when I was in anime, like in middle school, and like being with it, being into it with my friends and stuff, and like finding new people to be into anime with wasn't necessarily on the forefront of what I was thinking about when I'd watch it. I was just like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's kind of a cool show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then like you look back and you're like, oh, that was a pretty integral part of why I was into anime the way I was.
Mm-hmm. There was like, that, yeah, like there's definitely that sort of like initial appeal of like this, like, you know, before I watched like Problem Children, I still was like tuning in. I would set my alarm on my Nintendo DS and I was tuning in every like Saturday night at like 1 a.m. and I would set my alarm on my DS to wake me up so I could watch Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood on Toonami. Because
Full
like,
Metal Alchemist.
Full Metal Alchemist. So there was that kind of appeal. It's like, oh, this is like something different. This is something kind of cool. But it wasn't like, yeah, it wasn't until later that I was like, I would say I had like a bona fide interest in anime as anime, if that makes any sense. Like where I was like, I want to watch anime. Anime is a thing that I am, you know, fairly cognizant of now. I'm going to be completely honest. I was almost certainly was already jacking it to fucking hentai and stuff. Like well before, like if anything, that's probably why I got into anime, if I'm going to be completely honest.
Hentai came first.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. For like a fucking teenager, are you kidding me? That shit was awesome.
Yeah, I don't think that's an uncommon thing.
No, but no, I don't think. I mean, it's uncommon in certain terms of like, I don't think a lot of people are gonna say that.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I don't think it's common for people that are like into anime on this level necessarily to like have started off that way. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people that do start off that way generally find other things to get into for the same reasons.
Yeah.
That aren't, and you usually find some other reason to get into anime, like yeah, deeper, right? Oh yeah, I've never really like I enjoy the different perspectives because like anime and just like stories and media and literature and shit in general, right? Mm-hmm. It can speak to like a truth of like an experience in such a way that's not just reiterating that experience in a way that's almost hyper true, mm-hmm, like a hyper realism, where like you can get into like a story. I guess like something like Orb might be a good example of this, honestly, mm-hmm, where it's like people will get into Orb for the general sentiments that it's saying, right? Like the people that like Orb, us not being one of them,
yeah,
but the people that like Orb are getting into it for these general sentiments that speak to a truth of their experience.
Right.
But it is not literally true, right? Like it's not like it's like not a documentary or like a recounting of like an actual event.
Yeah.
But it speaks to like that experience that you can kind of filter through this sort of kaleidoscope lens of your experience. And you kind of like draw different things out of it, right?
You know, some people would call that projection.
Projecting. you're probably projecting.
you identified with this anime, and it sounds like you're projecting, my man. Unlike me, who has an ironic emotional detachment to everything. I'm cool, unlike you.
Sounds like projection.
Someone is telling you like how like profound and emotionally moving this piece of media was to them, and you just sounds like projection, sweetie. sounds like you're reading a little bit too much into it.
fuck. It is projection. But I'm totally off track. Holy shit.
Well,
it does speak to like that I think so. Okay, I know where I was going with it.
Yeah.
I don't consume it in a way that I'm like interested in trying to define myself necessarily. Like it, like obviously you can define the boundaries of like who you are outside of yourself as opposed to like internally or whatever, right?
It's kind of existential.
So like maybe, yeah, I guess there could be like a layer of that to it.
We need to get Joe Rogan on the podcast for this kind of shit.
You get Joe Rogan.
He tells that Joe Rogan DMT to have an out of body experience.
Jamie, if you're listening to this,
hey, Joe, hook us up.
But not like so. Like there could be. I'm not going to discredit that. There could be a layer of that to it. There definitely could be. Like as far as like defining yourself like externally, but I generally just enjoy like seeing things from like different perspectives that are outside of like something that I would be used to or like I would know myself or whatever.
Yeah.
So like that's why when I watch YouTube content, that's why I like having their experience like shine through in their content where they're like kind of conveying what it is they got specifically out of what they're talking about, right? I don't, to some degree, like you focusing in on like staff and stuff can like kind of inform that. Where it's like, I'm really into this sort of aspect of this production. So like, I'm going to focus in when I'm talking about the show.
Yeah.
And it's not like I don't enjoy content like that. Like, obviously I like Steve's content.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Hayden's stuff. Like you, people that do that kind of work and put the work into like informing you about what happened around the show is all well and good.
Right.
But like when people are talking about like, you know, just like a general season review or something, and then they spend half of it just kind of doing lip service to it, and they're not really going in depth with it, and then they don't really talk about their experience. It's more like about assessing the work from like this weird detached angle where you're kind of like trying to impress that you're somehow doing it objectively.
Yeah.
And not really leaning into or like really being upfront or paying attention to like these aspects that kind of define your experience.
Yeah.
It becomes kind of useless to me.
It's
like,
it's one of those things where, especially when it comes to reviews, I think what makes for a good or interesting critic is not necessarily like their ability to look at things objectively, but their ultimately like their perspective on it. And I think, you know, someone who has like a fairly unique voice, fairly unique perspective on something is going to be much more interesting than a bland milquetoast. Here's what I saw at the movie theater this week, guys, and I'm going to recount to you what those things are and then not really put any of myself into it at all. Like, yeah, I understand. Like, well, I mean, a lot of review content is that it's also just fucking boring. I guess like a counter example would maybe, do you know Critical Drinker?
Oh yeah,
yeah. I guess that's kind of like the opposite of like. I mean, I think his content's fucking annoying. but at the very least, it's not bland. There are at least things worth discussing and disagreeing with, as opposed to just blah.
Personally, I just think he's not ideologically interesting enough. Like he approaches it from like a moralistic, ideological.
Every time there's a joke about fucking woke modern audiences, and I'm just like, I don't. You're better than this.
No, he needs to be more extreme for it to be more interesting. Like
he needs to be fucking crazy. So you're saying he's not crazy enough with that shit.
Exactly.
Mm.
If he were just going off the deep end, then I'd be into like it's
That'd
like
be
when,
a little bit,
when
he's
look,
too reasonable. Where it's like, I mean, I can agree with him. You know, Hollywood sucks. Yeah, fuck those people. But it's also like, no, I want you to tell me like. Get into some conspiracy shit for me, all right? That's the
we need to like Gavin McGinnis, like anime is for pedophiles. We need like
Matt Wall,
anime is satanic.
Anime is satanic.
I need you to go that.
Now that's a take right there. All right,
We need to go deeper with this, okay? I can't get anything out of this fucking fence sitting or woke fucking bullshit. No.
You need to eat it. Critical Drinker did watch like Attack on Titan somewhat recently, and I think he liked it. But he had, you know, it also came with like the baggage of like weird takes about like anime is not afraid to tell stories where heroes are heroes and villains are villains. And I'm watching the review, listening to the video, I'm just thinking to myself, see what you mean? Attack on Titan is not the case example for that, buddy. I could see how you would think that for the first season, but oh boy, you're in for a rude awakening with how it takes Aerith's character and stuff.
Heroes are heroes and villains are villains. That's what anime is famous for.
What anime is famous for. Unambiguous conflict, like Frieren.
It's definitely not like people don't know Naruto for like, I don't know, talking to people and redeeming like Hitler or some shit. That's definitely not.
Yeah, definitely not.
Definitely not what anime is.
Naruto definitely does not do the Steven Universe meme of like they're talking to Hitler.
And they're like, jutsu.
Steven, I think we're gonna have to kill this guy.
It's a problem. It's a problem when people make content and it's just this mundane milquetoast, just
going through the motions kind of stuff. And it's like, hey, do you want to review some anime that we've been watching this season? You want to talk about some stuff? Let's talk about Emeku MD.
We just watched Emeku MD.
Watch episode 6. We're like halfway through the show now and I think I hate it.
It sucks.
It's disappointing is what it is. And we still need to get our seasonal video out. Hopefully that'll be done this weekend. Where I'm like, I wrote that having only seen. I did write that actually recently. What am I saying?
He wrote 5 episodes.
Yeah. And episode 6 certainly does not turn it around because it's the conclusion of this like 3 episode murder mystery arc. We are 6 episodes into this show, this medical mystery drama, and half of it, no, even more than half of it, because there was also an episode and a half dedicated to another murder mystery. So 75% of the show so far have not been medical mystery. It's been murder mysteries. And it's like, what the hell are we doing?
Like, you kind of forget this is supposed to be a doctor show.
You're supposed to be a doctor.
Episode 5, I think she literally was not on screen like 85 to 95% of the time. Like, it was like focusing on like her assistant and he was running around doing action shit.
Is arguably the main character of the show. He basically is on everything.
She's basically like Sherlock or House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
but like, she's more Sherlock because like she just keeps solving these like crimes. It's like, why aren't you just a detective?
Yeah, why aren't you just working for the police? You're solving these crimes for Columbo anyway. It's like
you're not.
But even then, like, the comparison to like Sherlock or House is like she has no character flaws. Her character flaw is like she's kind of weird and walks around barefoot. That's basically it.
Kind of quirky.
Quirky, yeah, and you compare this to like House or like Sherlock Holmes, and it's like, no, it's not even like not even close.
She should just be like House, where she's just like a deep-seated asshole. It's like,
oh, if she was just a fucking cunt, if she was a fucking bitch, then yeah, that would be something. But she's not. She's not really. She's never rude to anyone or condescending, or like a smartass. Or
she's just kind of a tsundere.
Yeah,
strong tsundere.
If anything, the our atheism stuff from Orb would be better served in this show as a character trait for Dr. Emeku, because that would then at least make her somewhat more like House.
Can you imagine, like, she's just like at someone's deathbed and they're like, oh, I can't wait to see Jesus. And she's just like, Jesus isn't real.
Jesus isn't real.
It was a conspiracy by the Romans.
But you also think that the Earth is the center of the universe.
What? No. Why would I think that?
She's like tying like a knot in the patient's IV.
She's like, this is what your Bible says. There's like a whole like debate, like theological debate.
Well, that's that literally what Dr. House does.
That would go so much harder.
I would also say Dr. House gets much more credit for Emeka than even Orb, because in House it's like he's not treated as being solely correct. It recognizes that he has an asshole view of religion, whereas like Orb is just like just up its own ass with no self-awareness.
Yeah,
like you've caught up significantly more than me. I still need to like sit down and like watch a lot of stuff, but like fuck, dude.
it's not been a good experience.
Yeah, I mean
like
the most
recent... you talked about it in like the video we did where it's
yeah
the show. I forget the exact quote. The show that's and so
it's very concerned with the immutable with, nature like, of the truth. Nature and like immutability, like stuff that is true no matter what, like ideology or doctrine or religion or any of these things say. There are immutable facts about the world that it doesn't matter. It's true nonetheless. And the show is just straight up fucking lying about and like just telling like a completely fabricated history of stuff, which to a certain extent, okay, fine. The characters in the show do not need to be historical figures. But at the same time, the way that like the church is portrayed, religion in general is looked at, the discussions that the show has about these things or topics of like, there's that who's the woman that's like an astrologer and then like the guy that she's like working for takes credit for like all of her research or something like that. And the way it's presented is so like just black and white. This guy is a terrible fucking asshole kind of thing. And it's like, what are we doing? Because there's a way you can handle that kind of conflict that is more interesting and gives a little bit more credence, a little bit more good faith towards the guy and his perspective and his motivations, rather than he's just a sexist asshole and people in the Middle Ages all just hated. It kind of almost treats the Middle Ages like the fucking Handmaid's Tale or something.
Yeah.
And
like there's so much more interesting show here. Cause like,
yes,
if they had handled it with like the nuance of that time period where you actually have people that have like dedicated their lives to this, like,
and you could mount way Earth-centric more like, model. Say, like these fucking like straw man critiques, if anything, just kind of like detract from any actual like legitimate criticisms people do have of the medieval Catholic Church.
Yeah, it's funny because like this takes place, it's taking place alongside like the Protestant Reformation,
which by the way, if there was anyone being fucking burned at the stake during the Protestant Reformation, it's not heliocentrists. I'm just putting that out there no one's being hunted down because they are saying that the sun is the center. Even the Catholic, you had people like the Pope being like, yeah, that could be used, you know, that could at least be useful for like predicting certain dates and stuff like that, because the show completely just does not seem to acknowledge the fact that scientific research during the Middle Ages through the Renaissance was primarily financed and backed by the Catholic. Like every major observatory in Europe at the time would have been operated essentially by the church.
Well, hell, that goes to like modern day almost. Like most universities were funded by churches, and shit.
And
like it's this weird like retro like revisionist history where it's like we want to paint religion as just being like, oh, this is just completely evil. It's like, no, there was a lot of good that came with it.
Yeah, no, like, I'm an atheist for context. I'm also not a big fan of organized religion. But at the same time, it's like, what are we doing here as well? It's not a black and white issue, nonetheless. It feels like the anime, and I guess by extent the story is approaching the setting with the mindset of that one fucking like Reddit meme where it's like scientific advancement over time, and scientific advancement in this context is solely centralized around like the Europe, and it's like it's going up and up and up and up and up, and then it's like, oh, this is the hole left by the Christian Dark Ages or whatever. I mean, just think, we could have been exploring the outer singularity by it. Has that energy to it with how it portrays the Catholic Church and its relationship with like science and technology.
Yeah, the science, they came up around, like, I think there's a good argument to be made that like religion is what fostered a lot of the sciences initially, because like they're like trying to understand.
In a lot of ways, it is impossible to separate religion from philosophy and scientific advancements. Like, from a historical context, these things are deeply, deeply like intertwined. It's not like they are just like in combat with one another, and the church is constantly trying to suppress new information coming out because they're just like, don't ask questions, just read the book. Like, that's never really been church doctrine.
Even like the new kind of like movements where it's like, oh, the earth is like 6,000 years old
like
that's flat kind of a newer thing.
Young earth creationists fucking love dinosaur bones. They constantly try to fit that shit into like their weird theories and stuff.
Oh yeah, this is what you would get from the flood or something.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck. And it's like, okay, champ.
Sure.
Whatever.
Whatever you say. But that's like a newer, like, generally it's been like trying to understand the universe and be like, this is all God's create. This is what God, the laws that God has put in place and stuff. Like, that's generally what science has been for, with alongside religion.
Yeah, that was Newton's whole thing, basically.
That
was like Isaac Newton's whole thing, basically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what a lot of scientists were. Yeah. Like
Descartes. Yeah.
It's just funny because like it is like a newer thing that we have like completely divorced, where it's like you have like some religious sects that are just like, oh, the just completely anti-science.
Oh yeah, well, then, like, that also largely emerges out of like American evangelicalism.
Yeah,
not the Roman Catholic Church. It's a very bizarre and profoundly, because I do think there are good moments in the show where it kind of hits on that same sort of like humanism and, you know, realizing your place in history and the universe. That's something like Vinland Saga or Planet, like, you know, stuff that you Makoto Yukimura does very, very well. And Orb does hit those things very well. But then it will like immediately undercut it with like this fucking fedora tipping. And it's like, why? Also, weird thing. This is not a problem with Orb per se, as much as like a thing that I've noticed in anime in general that feature the literal actual Catholic Church. They basically never bring up Jesus. They'll talk about God, but never Jesus, or when it comes to like the Catholic Church, like Mary. It's always just God, and it's very weird to me, honestly.
It is anime, like.
But it's not even like stuff that is like critical of like I watched Naoko Yamada's latest movie, Colors Within. Wonderful movie, very nice, just relaxing movie, and that movie takes place primarily in like this like Catholic boarding school in Japan.
Right.
And like, you know, the main character is obviously religious. The opening scene of the movie is her praying to God, but they never like frame stuff in like they will bring up scripture, but never frame stuff like as like the teachings of Christ, which is very strange to me, honestly.
I wonder if that's like from a Japanese perspective, is they don't really have a firm like grasp on how important like.
Maybe I would be curious to know. I'm not the biggest expert on. I mean, I know that Christian religion, Christian faith, the Catholic Church and stuff exists in Japan. It's actually like a fairly.
There's definitely like missionary work being done.
Yeah,
stuff.
I mean, like, and what's like, the fucking what's the one like South Korean like cult thing that like the guy who shot Shinzo Abe, his like mother got screwed over by. Like that stuff is also like very tied to like I think like the guy who founded that city is like the like reincarnation of Christ or something. So the those elements do exist, but yeah, they're just not very featured in even anime that neither take place in Japan, but or like feature like the Catholic Church. It's very strange, and yeah, I don't quite understand it.
I don't either. I've never really thought about that.
If you are someone listening who does understand it, please explain it to me. I would love to listen.
I wonder if it's like Muhammad or something, where it's like it's okay to talk about God in like a nebulous sense, but they feel like targeting a specific figure like that would be over the line.
Maybe.
In some way.
Maybe. I mean, you look at something like Fate has a really weird relationship with that, because it. Like, obviously, Prophet Muhammad, not in Fate. Neither is Jesus. Don't want to do that. That'd be kind of controversial, say the least.
Where's my Jesus?
You know, I mean, Jesus is one thing. The Prophet Muhammad is a whole other in terms of, like, it shouldn't be, like, depicting him.
Are the servants supposed to be dead?
I don't know. I don't really know. Like, when you get into, like, Fate Grand Order, I don't know who qualifies as a servant anymore. But then you also have like Moses, I think, is in Fate Grand Order, Abraham. So you could still have these like major, like, you know, figures in Abrahamic religions, but just not those two specifically, probably because like Jesus and Muhammad are also like the main figures of the two largest religions on earth. I guess there is Saint Onision, though.
Saint Onision, yeah, he hangs out with Buddha.
Yeah, that's cool. I think I've never seen anyone say a bad thing about Saint Onision, honestly. I think everyone looks in and goes, yeah, that's good. That's cool.
I don't know, like, because like, I guess like not all of them in Fate, I guess, are dead. Now I'm thinking about it, because like Saber's supposed to be like she's still alive and is being transported through time or some shit.
Oh, then there's all the stuff in her like dying hours, technically.
Yeah,
which is that's weird. I mean, that's kind of the joke with Fate almost, is that it sets up these rules and then kind of just ignores or subverts them.
Maybe it's something to do with like the mythos of the Holy Grail.
Maybe
Jesus cannot be summoned out of the Holy Grail because it is like through the power of it or something.
Have I ever told you my idea for like a character I would want to see in Fate?
Jesus?
Ford. And I want him to have the same ability as Gilgamesh, but instead of swords, it's cars. So he can just, you know how like Gilgamesh can like summon a bunch of swords and just like lunge them? It's like that with cars.
His noble phantasm would be like Monopoly or something.
it just sucks out
all the fucking mana.
It's literally just like the Motor City factory production line. So it's all the cars that he's like mass produced that he's just able to weaponize. That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
It's like an endless stream of cars being used as like a fucking attack.
Yeah, that would be the fucking coolest thing ever.
I don't know how that would work. I think that sounds really stupid, but that would be kind of cool.
It's fucking Fate.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to say all of Fate is stupid, but it's allowed to be goofy.
It's allowed. You can have
some silliness as a treat. You know, you can have like your Carnival Phantasm and stuff.
I feel like one show we should talk about. Zenshu.
Yeah. I mean, I think you are definitely way more into Zenshu than I am. So go off, King.
Oh yeah. Well, like, I feel like people have been very critical of it, because I feel like when I talk to people about it, they we're engaging with it on different levels.
You are Zenshu's strongest soldier, it feels like.
Right now,
like even something like Shumatsu Train, people generally liked, and then you just got really into it. But yeah, Zenshu is much more. I mean, I don't dislike the show. I'm just not particularly enamored with it either.
Well, yeah, because I think like the problem you have with it is very similar to like what a lot of people, where it's like you're not engaged with the fantasy elements of
it,
right?
Much reminds me of something like Heikkenmonogatari, where it's telling the story through the lens of this like outsider's perspective, but I'm not, and they themselves are obviously like invested and interested in the story, but I am not. Like, I think we talked about this like after watching like the second most recent episode or whatever, where I was like, I was watching this and it's like we're learning more about this world, about these characters and stuff, and I'm realizing, oh yeah, I could understand why in universe, in the context of the show, the movie, the anime movie that the world is based on was fucking hated. Because it's revealing information that was not technically in the movie.
I think.
And but yeah, it's integral nonetheless, and it's like, oh, it's, that was just never explained. Yeah, I would fucking hate that movie too.
She's talking about like the motivations of one of the characters. She's like, oh yeah, we were never really given an explanation why she betrayed everybody.
Yeah.
And it always like stuck with me. And I think that's like an important aspect of the show, because it's like, it's not necessarily that this is like a great story. It's one that just stuck with Natsu, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So she's like really, this has left a profound impact on her and like led her down the path to becoming an animator, an animation director, right? Yeah. But I think it's established from episode one that A Tale of Perishing, the movie that she is in, is a bad movie. They're like, oh, it's critically panned. And she doesn't really even like try to like excuse it, right? She's not like, oh, no, people think it was bad, but it's actually really good. No, she's like, oh, everyone hates it, but like, I really loved it.
It
left its profound impact on me.
Yeah.
And in the most recent episode, there's like this flashback and it kind of like goes through. It's approaching it from like a first love perspective. Mm-hmm. So it's going through people that fell in love with Natsuko for their first love or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But as you're going through it, you see, like, it does a really good job in characterizing Natsuko from like their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Where like we see that she's very detail oriented and she wants to like really understand something. So, in the second little vignette where she's like, she wants to draw. It's like she's been practicing drawing for like years at this point. Like she's in middle school, but it's been like 2 or 3 years since she started drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to draw someone running so fast that they're leaving like an after image, but she can't understand it because she's like, the way she approaches drawing, she's like, I have to understand how this thing is happening. So like, she's like watching people's like Adam's apple move up and down like repetitively so she can understand the actual motions of it and inside and out. So she's like trying to get this kid to run so fast he leaves an after image so she can like understand that as a motion, right? Like how fast you would actually have to move, the strain it would put in all this. So her being so into A Tale of Perishing and it leaving such a profound impact on her makes sense, right? Because she's like,
oh yeah,
trying to understand these like things that have just been left open. And they're like things that she's like searched for an answer for and couldn't find. And it's just,
I mean,
like
it
stuck
goes
with
back
her all this
to,
time.
I mean, I can relate to that. Like going back to what we were talking about earlier, getting into anime. When I watched Problem Children, you know, that's like a show from 2013. It's 10 episodes long. And the light novels continue well after that. It's never gotten a second season. So there were things in it. I distinctly remember, you know, after I finished the show, I would go on like the wiki and then just like read like all the stuff that like happens afterwards, all like the reveals and like world building and stuff. And I mean, I don't think anyone fucking even remembers Problem Children really. No one getting into anime nowadays is like going to be going back and
even aware what
it
that is
as like a must watch of 2013. But you know, it's definitely still something that, you know, means quite a bit to me. Because of like the context and when I watched it. So yeah, stuff like that is like, that's definitely interesting. It's just, it just doesn't hit as hard
into the
for
show.
Me specifically when it comes to Zenshu.
Sure. I think it's like, it's built into the show. Like it's aware of this.
Yeah.
So like you have moments where she's even like, she's like asking to go back in episode two. Cause she's like, I don't want to start hating the show. Cause like now I'm engaging with the characters as like people and like getting this firmer understanding. And she's like, oh no, fucking Luke is a sexist. Like, I don't need to like be around these people and like engage with them on a level that's outside the movie or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But now it seems like we're kind of approaching like this kind of debate where like you have the creator as like this avatar in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems to like be the reveal of like the latest episode was she's like, Natsuko was like, is this a tale of perishing anymore? Oh, who cares? Right. Mm-hmm. Like she's like, she's changing the show in such like in the movie in such a way that she's almost, it's almost unrecognizable at this point where she's like, is this even what I enjoy? Like what is happening now? Oh, who cares or whatever. And then like the author is like, yeah, no, it's not. Like it's not the that's where it ends or whatever.
Yeah.
So like we're kind of getting into this like interesting debate of like engage how you engage with media, what media means to you, how much of that ownership of the media is like you as a viewer, how much of that is the like the ownership of the person who had the vision and created the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It gets and, like, into it's, this. It's doing.
Are you, and this is not a topic I understand particularly well. I've tried researching into it. And it's kind of hard because the term seems to have multiple different uses in different contexts, but this idea of Sakaikon, which in the context of what I'm talking about is particularly relevant even in video games, which is this idea that outside of the context of the story, outside of the context of what you are experiencing, there is, you get a sense of like, there's like a broader world out there that is still operating outside of the context of the frame.
Right.
Which is always very interesting. So, and I think, I mean, that's something Zenshu deals with quite literally in terms of like explaining stuff that was never explained in the movie originally. I would love, and it would be very interesting to actually get an actual movie of A Tale of Perishing so we could like that would be neat. Then we could actually have a little bit more context almost.
It'd probably just be like an OVA or something, but that would be kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, something would be, even a special, you know?
But it's interesting because like I think what makes it work, even though it's like not great, right? The Tale of Perishing or whatever, it's not great.
No.
As like a story or all the setup or whatever, but it works for me because like Natsuko is not engaging with it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's engaging with it as like I need to change the story.
Yeah.
But like as she's like engaging with the characters, she's like, "Oh look, I haven't been able to see you at this angle before." And she's like hyper focusing on like her being able to see them as like three dimensional people as opposed to like just character sheets and what she's told is what they look like or, you know, stuff that she's having, like she's engaging with it and like deconstructing and breaking down these things that she's able to actually now see in person, which is cool. And like all these references are interesting because like, yeah, it's a love letter in like a meta sense to like, you know, Anno's cut to in Nazca, the Tano circus, Tiger Mask, these things, but in universe, these are things that she worked on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It didn't really like, it didn't say if she like did these specific cuts already.
It's not particularly. Yeah. But I mean, this is something that this isn't even something that's particularly like overtly told to the audience as much as something that we've kind of just inferred more or less.
Yeah. Cause the studio she works in is like, has these posters of the stuff she's drawing.
And like the first episode, we get like a recounting of like all the different stuff that she's done and we can kind of make a piece stuff together, you know?
Yeah. So it makes it this interesting kind of meta text, meta theme going on where she's drawing these things in like the things that she drew in her real life, in her production as a director, as an animator, in response to things that are coming up in A Tale of Perishing.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like everything she's kind of done in some way, in some facet, has been a response to these things that have like come up in A Tale of Perishing. So like her trying to understand this aspect might have led to this directorial position, decision or something. Right.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's doing it in a very overt way where she's saying this. It's just like that kind of meta layer to it where it's like, oh, these things that she's done is now being used as a response to these things in A Tale of Perishing directly. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like saying that, yeah, these are things that she did in response, like her getting into animation, mm-hmm. like in general, was yeah. like a response to A Tale of Perishing specifically.
It's interesting to look at this show as well, just from the perspective of anime, because obviously the show is very celebratory of animation as an art form. And it's actually kind of interesting to compare it to like the other, I mean, basically the only other anime original isekai like this, Suicide Squad isekai, in which, I mean, you know, we can talk about the show. You know, it's not the best show in, not the best isekai. I liked it a fair amount. And the reason I like Suicide Squad isekai probably more than a lot of people is because it's kind of a Sakuga fest. Show is like
a little bit.
Show is like very. You get a lot. Like every episode, it has at least one really interesting cut where it comes across like the key animator was basically just given carte blanche to approach it however they really feel, and it didn't necessarily matter whether or not their styles like jived with how the rest of the show looked. And I think that's fucking awesome. I think that's great. I think more stuff should approach things like that. So it's interesting to then look at like Zenshu, and it's also, you know, has a pretty pronounced focus on every episode. Basically we're guessing like what's going to be the animation thing that she's going to whip out this episode to solve the problem.
I think it was interesting. Was it episode 6 where she just draws stairs? That were kind of like,
yeah, kind of we were kind of like, that's odd.
But like when you look at it, it ties into like what they're going for, like
in terms of like her character arc for that episode. Yeah.
Yeah, well, like there's the obvious level where she's like the whole thing of like cooperation.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, you can't. But do even like on your own.
But even that, even from like a Sakuga perspective, it makes a lot of sense because it's like she's drawing something that only she can do.
Mm-hmm.
Not that like nobody could draw stairs or whatever, but in the context of the show, no one else is going to be able to put these stairs or whatever, like get them where they can get up there. So she's drawing something that only she can do, so that she can highlight the someone else's talent, yeah, right? So like you get the, instead of the Sakuga like Itano Circus or whatever, you're getting like the, what's it called, the After Effects, like the fucking Saber Excalibur shot,
what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago in terms of like the kind of animation that people are just like they can look at and go, that's great animation, holy fucking shit, versus the kind of animation that maybe isn't necessarily like immediately like stunning, but you look at it more and you think about it and you kind of go, this is kind of insane to like look at this, even if it's not necessarily like super flashy or whatever. So you look at like, you know, the first couple episodes of Zenshu, it's like all these like big spectacle moments and stuff. You get Gurren Lagann references, Eternal Circus, Nausicaa, all these awesome things. But that's also not all animation is. We'll probably do an episode in the coming weeks as well where I do want to sit down and watch some graduation shorts, because those have been coming out recently because we're in graduation season now.
In Japan, yeah.
Yeah, in Japan, for context. So I'd like to like just sit down and talk about and recommend some of those, since I'm a big fan of just independent animation that you get on YouTube in general. And one of the interesting things that you'll get a lot of the time on YouTube, it's just really mundane stuff. People practicing things, people trying out different, like someone is like trying to figure out how to properly draw like an object rolling down a hill. So then you know, they are like animating that, and it's very, very simple. And then, you know, they just put it up on YouTube. It's just kind of like a thing they did. And, you know, most animation that you're watching, you're not thinking about is kind of the thing. You're not thinking about a character running upstairs. You'll think about the goddamn Itano Circus. You're not going to think about a character running upstairs. Even if the character running upstairs from an animation perspective is as challenging and difficult and technically impressive as, like, you know, the big flashy boom boom stuff.
Well, yeah, because, like, the character animation of them actually moving up the stairs could be much more detailed than, like, adding all these layers of, like, After Effects shit.
I mean,
right?
Fuck, we were watching Ojisan Villainous. Again, one of the... definitely check that out. We'll probably talk about it a little more in the coming weeks as well. There was a cut towards the end of not the most recent episode, but the episode prior where... what the fuck's the name of the episode pink-haired six. Girl? God damn it. I'm blanking on it.
Anna. Anna Doll.
Yeah, yeah. She's like telling off these like bully characters, and like holy shit, like the character animation there is phenomenal. Like the way like the fabric on her coat, her like jacket is like moving with like the different like shadows and shading. It's really fantastic work, but it's also
there are a lot of frames put into like her just swaying back and forth.
Yeah, let me see if I can actually
just like standing there.
Shit, let me see if I can find out who handled that cut real quick.
But yeah, it's like that level of like detailed character animation oftentimes probably does take more work than the big flashy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes so much more unappreciated.
Yeah, is this it? Yeah, Tetsuya Takeuchi. Yeah, you know, it's so in that sense, I would say that Zenshu is very interesting. I just do not care about the characters or story.
Yeah. I mean, I like Natsuko a lot.
She's growing on me. I still don't really care for... I mean, Luke is growing on me as well. I don't care about fucking Yuniko at home or...
No.
Or any
of
that.
I don't think the elf gets a husband, though. Like, that's... I think it's more less about like I was thinking about this because I'm like, when did I like diverge exactly from this mentality?
Because
it's like when someone talks about it, it's like, yeah, these are not the most like in-depth characters, but they're being utilized in a way that's taking advantage of these like themes, and like it's service to something greater than just themselves as a character, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm not going to argue that like that makes them great characters because they're in service of something else.
Right.
And it's like detrimental to their writing as a character specifically, but it doesn't like it. It's just not as detrimental to me, like my experience watching something anymore, that like a character might not necessarily be as fleshed out. Like I was thinking about
it's a matter of like, you know, it's being more open-minded in terms of what can matter in a story, can matter.
Holistically, like, or something.
Like, you know, a character, you know, characters and story. It's nice when those things are really well done, but they don't necessarily need to be. But if they're not, then it does need to be. You need to be doing something else that can be appreciated without that.
Right.
If,
like,
if there's nothing to appreciate, then it just kind of sucks.
Think of like there was like a short that Furiko short or whatever, where it's like the fucking Pendulum to the Muse song or whatever.
Oh yeah,
like that has no characterization hardly. Like it's like a very basic bare bones thing, but like it's in service because like what are you gonna do in 3 minutes, right? Like how are you gonna like flesh out an entire person's like entire worldview or like perspective where you're like, oh yeah, I understand, because you know, he grew up on a farm, and so he's very pragmatic. And so it's like, how are you going to do all that in 3 minutes, right? So, like, it's in service to something greater that even though it's sacrificing aspects of their character, it is elevating the writing of that character being, you know, lesser by being it being in service to something that's greater than the sum of its parts kind of thing.
Yeah. It's, to quote Kendrick Lamar, you know, it's, life is perspective. And that's going to do it for us tonight, everyone. Thanks for coming out and watching the Weeb Crew. Have a good one.